Hi, I'm Liam O'Rourke, and this week we've learned that Daniel Bryan's brain is a mess, Brie Bella likes to say yes, and Vince McMahon spells irrational T-I-T-U-S.
I'm Cole Jones, and most of you loyal listeners know me as one of the regular panellists on SCG Radio. You may not know that I've had many jobs over the course of my career. When Pat Patterson first visited San Francisco, I had elocution lessons with him. From 1984 to 1988, I was a dietitian for Adrian Adonis, and in the fall of 1991, I took care of Virgil's poor sick mother.
I'm G. John Chase, and for a while now, I kind of realised that out of all of the members of SCG Radio, I'm the one that doesn't have a gimmick. We do have Old Man Jones, The Wrestling Prophet, and Baby Meltzer, but luckily, after last week, you can now call me the Marty Jannetty of the CM Punk defence team.
And I'm Kieran O'Rourke, and the day we're recording this, Adam Johnson, former England international, has admitted to a Jerry Lawler-esque charge of sex with an underage girl, which got me thinking, why would famous people lower themselves to sex with a minor? And after much research, I can confirm the number one cause of paedophilia is in fact sexy kids.
This is the panel for the 72nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio, and you can hear us talk about the worst gimmick match concepts in wrestling history next. And welcome to the 72nd Squared Circle Gazette Radio. I am Liam O'Rourke, alongside G. John Chase.
Yep, yep.
Carl Jones.
My apples aren't rotten.
And Kieran O'Rourke.
Easy now.
And we are back this week to talk about the worst gimmick match concept in wrestling history, or at least a debate regarding that. There are so many different candidates that you, the loyal listeners, have provided us. Again, pages and pages of feedback, as always, and we can't thank you enough for your continued support of this show. If you're listening to us for the first time, you can check out all of our old shows at squaredcirclegazette.com, where we release every show every Friday. You can, of course, subscribe to us on iTunes to make sure you never miss a show, or follow us on Facebook, facebook.com/scgradio. You'll find us there. And again, very excited for this show. I want to give a thank you to a powerful fox on the UK fan forum who came up with this topic for us here today, and it only seems appropriate we're going to get to his suggestions first. We have so many to discuss. We'll kick it off now with Powerful Fox's first suggestion, which is Kennel from Hell. The cage match is arguably one of the most well-devised gimmick matches there has ever been. Sadly, it is also the father of a set of bastard children. Al Snow in the Big Boss Man feud fell victim to one of them. A bit of background, the storyline itself focused on a treacherous boss man feeding Al Snow's beloved dog Pepper to Snow, only a short while before desecrating the funeral of the Big Show's father, and only a few years after imprisoning an innocent Nails. Snow devised the Kennel from Hell match, a standard blue steel cage on the apron, surrounded by dogs, surrounded by Hell in a Cell, as a way for said specially trained killer Rottweilers to get revenge on Bossman for his heinous act on their canine brother. As hard as it is to believe, the fans weren't into it, and the only noises that could be heard were the sounds of dogs barking, shagging, and most ironically, shitting around the ring. Wrestling from the UK fan forum says it has to be Kennel from Hell, doesn't it? The angle itself was actually good lower mid-card fodder, with Bossman making Al Snow eat his own dog. Nice attitude era stupidity, but fuck me, to think they actually had to take the time to assemble the Hell in a Cell, assemble a cage, and hire dog handlers, the crew must have been livid. Dominator on TPWW suggests this match and says it was such an embarrassing abomination of a match that WWE thankfully has never attempted another. Definitely one for the What Were They Thinking files. And Haphazard on the F4W board says Kennel from Hell would have been fine for a main event match. It devalues the Hell in a Cell to have used it for a match stemming from a comedy feud involving someone eating a dog. So this was a one-off. Bossman Al Snow, third from the top, Unforgiven 1999, believe it or not.
Well, I will say the crew themselves might have been pissed off, but I'll bet Jimmy Valiant was thrilled.
It wasn't underneath the mats, unfortunately, Carl.
You missed a trick there, Jimmy. You missed a trick. We should have seen this coming, really, when you think about it at the time. Off the back of the Big Boss Man's stellar Hell in a Cell match with The Undertaker, it was only logical that the only way to top that would be to put the traditional cage on the inside of it and just have a gigantic clusterfuck. Which, funnily enough, as the emailer referenced, is what the dogs were doing outside the ring.
That's the funniest part of this match. It's just that the idea of, let's put these dogs, because they weren't going to use dogs anyway. They're just standing there for no reason. It's completely pointless and retarded. But it's just these great moments where the camera just happens to catch the dog shitting on the floor. Just so happens to catch two dogs going at it on the floor.
I think the only thing they missed was a dog pissing up the ring post, wasn't it?
They could have at least had Bossman like take a bump into the shit or something. get some point out of it, some payoff.
It could have been like just an interesting like
I don't know, just reversal of what the concept of the match was, that by the time they climbed up the first part of the cage and fell down, it wasn't necessarily the danger of the dog, but just more just the cesspool that was like forming below
them. God, there's shit everywhere! Actually, this is a great one to kick us off, because I love, if anybody's seen it, the Hard Knocks and Cheap Pops DVD, when Mick Foley and Kevin Kelly did commentary over this match. Foley put this match on his own DVD just so he could bury it. And it's just great for the commentary of when the camera catches the dog's fucking on the floor, Foley starts hypothesizing, what if the dogs breed and there's like 100 Rottweilers on the outside? My God, how will they ever escape? It's just completely...
Quick, we gotta finish the match. The dogs are fucking like rabbits.
So, out of curiosity, did one of those ugly bowling shoes that JR referred to ever step in the dog shit?
No, but the bowling shoe was referenced, as you mentioned there, Carl. This was an absolutely horrific match. Oh, a good one to kick us off, because this was, of course, during the Russo Reign of Terror, and I believe I have no guilt in assigning this to him.
Absolutely not. And we should also point out that it was such a shame that the feud ended in this way, after it got off to such a great start with the spike being drilled into the fake head.
I bet no one remembers that.
With the one email there about them saying about it would have been a good for a main event. I'm gonna try and read between the lines on that one. I don't think he kind of means as in it should literally have been in a main event, or that it's good enough to be a main event. I'm hoping he believes that it was ridiculous to be a mid-card concept, considering, like, as you said, the construction involved in terms of like putting two separate cages up and then, you know, hiring dogs out
for an Al Snow match.
It's like, that's what I'm hoping he means by main event, is that, like, you know, something that takes that much care should surely have been a main event style match. But like, yeah, way too much effort for what would end up being the match equivalent of the Shockmaster.
I think it's fair to put this one on Russo, because it's got all his trademark. So we've got one gimmick. So how about we add another gimmick which contradicts the first gimmick, and we'll add dogs. Logic, Vinny Roo.
Just insert joke of them screwing the pooch.
Exactly. Now we move to Powerful Fox's second nomination for the worst gimmick match concept of all time by saying the Punjabi Prison was a steel cage match made of wood, and it was utter bollocks. Featuring Batista and the Great Khali, it was like a steel cage match. There was a door to open by the referee, but it was made of wood. Like a steel cage, the challengers needed to climb a structure to get out, but made of wood. It made the Kennel from Hell match look like Michaels and Taker, and it was maybe somewhat of a saving grace that you could barely see any of the match because of all the wood. Luckily, this one did have crowd interaction, but I'm pretty sure, even from here, I could have heard the fans in Illinois shitting all over this one like a set of well-trained Rottweilers, even if I turned the volume down to zero. The show, guys, award well and truly deserved. The British Bushwhacker on the UK fan forum says the Punjabi Prison was utter dross. Weeks of billing to Taker telling Khali he would see him in his Punjabi prison, only for the big bandy-legged shit to suddenly find himself with the dreaded elevated liver enzymes. We then get an equally awful replacement in Crybaby Big Show. It absolutely bombed, and you would think a lesson to WWE, but no, they bring back the goddamn thing a second time. Suplex Sinner on the UK fan forum also said the Punjabi Prison, the fact there were two of them makes it worse. It just made no sense and was visually off-putting. Kira on TPW also said, not only was the guy it was actually made for not in the thing, but you've created a bamboo stick kennel from hell. I mean, why? And Drave from TPWW says, I was there, and it was very easy to see what was happening. More so than what was happening, the rules were more confusing to most, as far as what doors were opened, didn't open, etc. This was at the Great American Bash, where nearly every fucking match was changed because of elevated enzymes in the livers of nearly all the top names. Bobby Lashley. This was very contrived.
It's a fucking gimmick match designed around the Great Khali.
Yeah.
What the fuck do you expect?
would this classify then as being worse than the Kennel match? Because they only did one of those. Mm. Whilst this one, they didn't learn from their mistake. They did it freaking twice. So is it like, you know, shame on them, you know?
Just think of the money that went into building this thing that was only used twice.
It's just, there's so many things that are wrong with it. As Kieran mentioned, you know, it's built around one wrestler who then doesn't participate in it. Okay, so we can't have Khali in there. Right, maybe we should try really hard to get a really good worker in there. It's like, nah, just
put Big Show in there.
Yeah,
that'll be fine.
Needs to be a big guy.
He'll do.
The thing is, there's a bit of a differentiation between bad in concept and bad in execution. Kennel from Hell was an awful match and an awful concept because of, you know, the element of live dogs. The Punjabi prison as a concept, I hated the thing about the doors. Remember that? It was like there's four bamboo doors on either side, and once you call for one to be opened, you got 60 seconds to get out before it's closed forever. This is just so hokey.
So when they'd left the Aztec zone, where did they go next in the Crystal Maze?
Should have been a tiger in one of the
caves. Yeah, sweet. Tigers in between the two.
So what would have happened if they went for each door once and failed every single time?
That
and all
happened.
Of them were shut? Was that when they throw the dogs in?
No, they'd have been locked in, and the team captain would have had to have decided whether or not to give up a crystal to release. Just get Richard O'Brien there with the harmonica now, and everything's sorted.
Now, you know what? You're joking there, but I'm telling you what, if there was one way to improve that match, it would be Richard O'Brien on the outside. I'd watch it for that.
I've said for years, Richard O'Brien needs to be a manager.
Yeah, no. I'd watch that match if Richard O'Brien was just ringside with harmonica just playing and just cracking jokes. Yeah.
Start the fans, please.
Somebody needed to, fuck hell. Do you remember the finish too of the first one, where it's like Big Show Taker, and Taker jumps off the one to crossbody Big Show through the other to apparently break the cage, but it had such a little force that the doors just kind of open like really slowly, and it's like Taker just kind of sauntered out the door. It's like, oh, it was just the shits again. Poor concept, poor execution. We'll move along now to well, TNA, because to be quite honest, there's a lot of them. Slapnut on the UK fan forum says you may as well merge this with a TNA thread. Surely, Feast or Fired and Elevation X are the absolute worst of all time. Feast or Fired in particular is ridiculous. If you win, there's a 1 in 4 chance you'll get fired. No thanks. Neil Robinson on the Facebook page says, why would you enter a match where you could end up losing your job? Oh, I know why, because it's TNA. Carbomb on the UK fan forum says, Feast or Fired is the absolute worst of the worst. I might barely understand if it was to get one of the three shots at the world title, but to have shots at the lesser titles. It just seems like the stupidest match to ever get involved in. Goodyear on Pro Wrestling Only says, I literally don't know why anyone would want to participate in this one. 1/4 chance to get a case that you will get you removed from the company. It's not even the loser of the match that gets fired, which would at least make some semblance of sense from a high risk, high reward standpoint. But you could be the first person to get a case and be fired based on grabbing the wrong identical case. Or you could get a shot at the X Division title. Totally worth the risk. Neil is Brill on the UK fan forum says, Jesus wept. My missus put Impact on the telly at the weekend, and I had to explain why four people had Money in the Bank contracts. She then shut the whole thing down with this little gem. So if I was in that match, I'd grab a briefcase and open it immediately. If it was the fired one, I'd just hang around until someone else grabbed a case. Then I'd wallop them with my own case, nick theirs, and leave them with a pink slip. Failing that, I'd just walk off and have no part in any of it. And an Air Raid on the UK fan forum wanted to chime in on this one too, and said that TNA would brazenly steal something that WWE created and used to some dramatic effect is a given. The fact that they would A, ramp it up to overkill, and B, make it worse, should also be a given. Overkill by the fact there are four briefcases, because hey, if one is good, then four must be four times as good, right? Making it worse is something TNA achieves twice by jettisoning the ladder match, which is often exciting, in favour of a hideous crossbreed of the Battle Royal, which is always boring, and the gimmick on a pole match, which is always dumb. However, as others have already stated, it's the content of the cases that is the worst factor, the part that really insults my intelligence. One of those briefcases gets you fired. The Feast or Fired is usually crammed full of lower mid-card or opening match talent, quite a few of whom tend to only appear on TV to get beat or seem to be going nowhere. I'm sorry, but the risk versus reward payoff for some of those guys, with my real-life logic hat on, is simply not adequate for them to try and get one of those briefcases. In a world where you're a loser in TNA, you're probably not heading to WWE anytime soon. Assuming that participation in the match is something forced upon them, it's insulting to my intelligence that at least some of these lads don't just stay out the way and not bother trying to retrieve a briefcase. Sorry, but you'd think, fuck that, if someone asked you to try to succeed in anything where your actual success had a 25% chance of you losing your job. Boring, dumb, and insulting my intelligence all at once? That's TNA! Utter bollocks that the winner of a match, any match, could end up being disadvantaged by actually winning. The stupidest bullshit since Dallas Page lost the world title in a tag match that his team actually won and then celebrated. Fucking WCW and fucking TNA 2. Ugh! So that kicks us off on the TNA ones. There's many of them.
Yeah, I'm sorry, I'm going to have to drop a logic bomb on all these folks.
Oh, here we go.
But it's fucking TNA. Of course you want to be fired. That's the briefcase you do want.
I say, considering that the ref said that it's a lot of opening acts and maybe lower mid-card at best, those people are paid in food stamps anyway, yeah. So what's losing your job?
Exactly. Lose your job and go, you get some career elevation, go and work at Walmart or something. It's
like, something Shane Douglas.
Target.
beat you to it. Yeah, this is just a horrible concept. I'm never a big fan of these kind of, you know, mystery boxes, and there's another one that TNA would do later on that we'll get to later, but just the entire premise sucks. It's the fact that they even knew how stupid it was and did stuff like this anyway. Like, there was one of them, I think Billy Gunn got a briefcase and brought it to the middle of the ring, and everyone surrounded him to try and get the briefcase, and then Billy Gunn threw it over everybody into the waiting arms of BG James on the floor, and then BG James, you know, laughed about how they pulled one over on everybody, and then all of a sudden sold despair because he realised, oh no, I might be fired now. It's like, this is like, did no one think this through at all? It's just absolutely terrible. So yeah, this is a tick in the box, is a good candidate for the worst one ever for me. However, there's another one here from Total Nonstop Action. Pat Dooley on the Facebook page says, hands down, King of the Mountain. It's a ladder match, but first you have to pin somebody to qualify to climb. And if you get pinned, you have to go to a penalty box. Okay, so you pin someone. Time to go up and pull down the... Wait, what? You have to go and find an official who's walking around ringside carrying the belt. Then you carry the belt up the ladder with you to try and hang it. Such a bad idea. TNA must have only done it once. 11 times? On the plus side, offers an easy microcosm of just how far TNA has fallen over the years. The first one in 2004 was Jarrett versus Killings versus Styles versus Raven versus Chris Harris. The one they did 2 weeks ago was Eric Young versus Will Ospreay versus Big Damo versus Bram versus Jimmy Havoc. What an all-star lineup that is. John Carr 92 on the UK fan forum says, essentially a reverse ladder match in which one must hang the belt to win. However, things are confusing. To be eligible to win the match, you had to get a fall on an opponent. That person goes to the penalty box for 2 minutes. It's possible to go in more than once after you're eligible. The flaw is it's hard to follow if you've not seen it, and hanging the belt to win makes you want a proper ladder match, which would be a bigger and better draw. I don't know who came up with this, but this is one of... They went on a bit of a kick at in like 2004, I want to say, of coming up with ideas like this.
Most ridiculous concept you can think. It's just that, it's just them trying to find a new twist and them not having anywhere near the creativity to actually come up with anything decent.
I don't understand that. This is creative. This is creative. It's more... It's different. It's... You hang the belt and it's like ice hockey as well.
Yeah.
What could be wrong with this?
Because the ladder itself is not enough. The penalty box. Yeah. We need the penalty box.
Yeah. Wasn't there some... There was just the one penalty box, though. So one person... If someone obviously got penalised, I guess, and gets thrown in there, what happens if someone else got penalised? Did they go in the same box with them?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Look,
they stood there and had a friendly discussion.
Yeah, they didn't fight. They just both stood there, just going, well, you know, I tell you what, mate.
Shit.
In about 1 minute's time, I'm kicking the shit out of you.
Yeah.
It's like, what?
You climb the ladder and hang the belt.
To take it off immediately.
Do you climb back down then and then go and grab it again and celebrate?
Yeah. I don't understand why they didn't. Why they had to carry the belt to hang it. Why?
Why hang
Why can't you just have the belt up there and take it down?
Because that's not creative.
Oh, I guess not. Stupid. I hate the visual of seeing guys who aren't the champion with the belt before they win it. Yeah. There's something there with me. I just don't like that mix. And so just seeing like them carry the belt around, grab it, and then they're so eager to get up there and hang it just so they can take it down and say, yes, I've got it. It's just, I hate it. We'll have a quick break from TNA here because we've got plenty in a row that we'll get to. And we'll go to ones a bit more broad. Tiger Rick on the UK fan forum says, scaffold match. Did they draw in the old territories? If so, maybe slight justification for it, but as a spectacle, they're absolutely shit. They have no correlation to wrestling whatsoever. They're utterly tedious, and once you've seen one, you've seen them all. Definitely a gimmick I'm glad is deader than Jim Cornette's career. Or Ambulance Chaser, also on the UK fan forum, says the wrestlers understandably just spend the entire match tiptoeing around. They throw half-hearted strikes to ensure they don't throw themselves off balance, constantly checking their position to make sure they are central on the walkway. Not to mention extremely dangerous. It's a ridiculous concept, in my opinion.
Well, let's just be grateful that they didn't do anything daft like send a £400 up on the scaffold. Oh, wait.
Yo, baby, yo.
There is a slight difference to this one as opposed to the others we've mentioned, and I don't want to defend the match in an artistic sense. They are terrible to watch. I have never seen a good one at any point. That includes Shane Douglas and Torrey Wilson against Billy Kidman and Medusa. But there are examples of it drawing. So it does have that tick as a comparison. I don't really want to give it a full-throated defence. But at least, unlike, say, the Punjabi prison match, which you would argue, why have they done that a second time? King of the Mountain, 11 times, you know. I don't want to quote old Mike Graham here, but never drew a dime. Whereas at least with the scaffold match, you can see a sort of a sense of logic of why they would go back to, because there were historical precedents of it drawing in the past.
This one was the one that immediately came to mind in terms of just worst gimmick. I mean, anything else that we're going to come across, mostly with TNA, it's just, you know, they're just ridiculous. They're kind of like the hardcore Holly of gimmick matches for me. But the scaffold, for me, is the scaffold is the new jack of match types for me. As in, this insults my intelligence. And just all my kind of sensibilities of what I have in wrestling. And I have a real problem with this match. And yes, I do recognise what Carl stated with the fact that there's been evidence of these shows drawing, which just absolutely leaves me perplexed as to why. This is just, not just an awful concept, but also just a ridiculously dangerous one.
Well, yeah.
It's just, I mean, and I know there's obviously loads of other dangerous matches that people can put in, put down, you know, C4 fucking exploding, whatever that Mick Foley did and so on. It's just offensive from beginning to end.
I think this is a harsh take.
It's a different time, you've got to think. And the reason they could draw is because it was the myth that you could hype it. It's a different time.
These two guys who hate each other are going to be at high risk, and they want to throw each other off because they hate each other.
The concept of the build is completely logical in a different, simpler time.
I can never recall any of those matches that were any good or exciting when watching them back. It just takes you out of it, you know. There's moments kind of like, at least it feels with a lot of these scaffold matches, that like these people just booked into it, because you just have to look at the fucking performance aspect of it. Like you see, it just kind of takes you out of the match. So you got like the Road Warriors, right? These big fucking jacked up tough guys, fucking screaming at the camera and so on. When you end up watching the match, what you see is two guys shitting themselves faster than Psycho Sid at Mania 13. It's just, you just see these two big guys scuffling along the boards, holding on to each other desperately, doing like these really like soft punches because they don't want to sway too much, because they don't want to fall, because of the legit danger of the match. So it just takes you out of it, where you're just seeing like, what's the psychology of the match? What fucking psychology of the match? There's no work if there's just genuine fear. You're just seeing four guys fucking shitting themselves. It doesn't create any intrigue. There's no like a real excitement.
It clearly did draw excitement and
drew money,
so that is a mark against your argument there. Like I say, I don't want to go overboard defending the scaffold match, as you know, optically I don't enjoy them, but I think your take on this is far too harsh, based talking logic wise off the back of the Kennel from Hell and the King of the Mountain.
The psychology is you're going to pay to see this extremely dangerous spectacle, and yes, it is an extremely dangerous spectacle. So from that perspective, no one's debating that. That point's completely valid. However, from the business perspective, like I said, they drew, so there has to be something to it.
The point is, it's the anticipation it created, with the sense of danger that some fucking shit was going to go down. Fully accepted, it might be true, and aesthetically they weren't great matches, but they drew because they created anticipation towards a match.
Actually, the psychology was on the money, clearly, because it achieved its goal.
Whether we like them as matches or not, there was clearly drama to them.
I think there's a line to like what really a performer should do, and I think that scaffold, however much it may have drawn, I think it crossed the line.
You probably should have just fucking said no. Fuck you, I'm going up there. You do it yourself. Lou Pickney on the F4W message board said the WCW Doomsday Cage match from Uncensored 96 was an atrocious idea, both in theory and in execution. KO Bossy on WrestlingForum.com says, other than being booked horrendously, the idea of a triple cage was interesting. Not executed well, but interesting. What really fucked this matchup was placement. The structure was so big that it couldn't be in the centre of the arena. It was off to the side, where about 15% of the crowd could get a decent view, and even that view was blocked by all the cages and wires, so in essence nobody could see shit. It was made even worse because Hogan and Savage had to start in the top cage and escape out through the bottom one. The top was high up, with the rafters in the background, which were dark. The top wasn't lit, so people could at best see vague shadows doing stuff. Anyway, the wrestling sucked too, but eventually Hogan and Savage made it to the bottom and inexplicably leave the cage to go brawl in the ring with Z Gangster and the Ultimate Solution. They had to leave to win, and they left, and the match continued. Then they returned. Luger went to hit Savage with a loaded glove, Savage ducked, and Flair was behind him. Luger stopped his motion, then punched him anyway, and knocked Flair out. Hogan and Savage left the cage, but Savage ran back in, pinned Flair, then left, and they won. The finish was totally blown, which was appropriate for such a shit match. If this was done with better people in a better way, if WWE had to do something like this, it would probably be significantly better just because they take the care to light everything properly and not put a blue hue over most of the cage and not have them just walk out and then come back.
And they probably wouldn't have brought Z Gangster in to do it.
No.
Who is apparently still alive, I'm informed.
Yeah. Or the ultimate / final solution, depending on who you're listening to.
X-Nay.
Yeah, so a real rogues gallery that came to challenge Hogan and Savage for this match.
Well, it just sort of nicely summed up the shitness that was the Hogan versus Dungeon of Doom feud as well.
Yeah. Well, I think my favourite story of this is that Pillman was supposed to be in the match.
Oh,
and then scheduled
wonderful.
A throat surgery to get out of it because he didn't want to do the match. It's like, when you're willing to go under the knife and have your vocal cords cut with a scalpel rather than be in this match, I think that says something about what this was.
This is one that had Arn Anderson in as well,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, Arn made an appearance in this.
For fuck's sake.
Meng Barbarian.
Yeah, this was like the 2-on-59.
2-on-8.
Yeah. Just...
Joe Ankovic on the Facebook page writes, Battle Ball / World War 3 were clearly WCW's attempts at a specialised battle royal in the vein of the Royal Rumble, but clearly they didn't have a Pat Patterson mind behind it. Quiet, Carl. The rules were so hard to understand that the commentators spent most of the match trying to explain them and getting them wrong more than once. Add to that the rules were inconsistent from year to year. Maybe some of TNA's ideas were dumber, but WCW was a big deal. Ric Flair, Sting, and plenty of other legends of the day were in these matches, along with tons of nobodies, seeing as how they insisted on having everyone and their mom in these ill-advised excursions. It was like having an NFL Pro Bowl with a different field of play with unique nonsensical rules. Not only is it not fun to watch, it's confusing and gives the viewer a headache. And CPRN27 on F4W says, I'll also cast a vote for WCW's World War 3 concept. Having three mini-screens to show three battle royals happening at the same time made for terrible viewing. Nobody gave a shit to see State Patrol and Cobra getting their shots at the WCW title. They should have just done a traditional battle royal. So a couple of good candidates there. Battle Bowl and World War 3, two of WCW's more ill-advised ideas.
I'll bet he marked that for Firebreaker Chip, though.
Did he know what in Battle Bowl 91?
Something like that. This, I think it's... I think we've seen with a lot of these early entries we've gone through here, this notion of how, in truth, you know, simplicity is always best. Less is more. Over-egging the pudding, you know, there's too many chefs in the kitchen. Battle royals by themselves are the shits anyway. Yeah. So when you add two rings, and as if all that's not bad enough, you know, the action's terrible. It's split between three screens, so you can't really focus on anything, so you're not entirely sure what's happening at any stage. You've then got the three commentary teams. And if I just say that Lee Marshall was on one of these teams, I think the evidence speaks for itself.
I remember a time when I never saw any of these matches. And it was a happier time.
I just remember just watching this and just thinking, like, this is like some 5-year-old's birthday party in a ball pit. It's just fucking chaos. It's just like, you got these little screens that you can't fucking make out what anything is going on. And as Carl mentioned, three commentary teams, they just go back and forth, and it's just so ridiculous because they're not sticking with any commentary team for like any extended period of time. They're just going back and forth. It's almost bordering on like that kind of that Family Guy skit with the Black Weather Reporter. What's going on in your ring? Someone's got thrown out. You know, it's just like it's just the most ridiculous fucking concept. Imagine just slowly like as people are leaving, they still got the three screens up, and you're thinking, come on, you can easily go to one ring now. You can go to one ring. And it's like, no, you got to wait till there's two people or one person left. It's the more and more, it's like, you know, we're jerking off and we're blowing our load all over the fucking screen and fucking deal with it.
Not the best. Battle Bowl as a concept is a really weird one because it's like, first of all, nothing really more needs to be said other than the lowest buy rate in WCW history was Battle Bowl 93. Just when you got a roster that bad and you've got mystery matches on the card. So basically you got 32 people. Random guys are drawn into teams. So you actually know any match is going in is the deal here.
Always a winning formula.
Always a winning formula. The winners of the 8 tag matches go to the Battle Bowl. Which in 91 was like a 2-ring battle royal where it started in one ring and then you had to throw, everybody had to be thrown into the other ring over both sets of top ropes to then throw them out the ring again. And then obviously, you know, you end up with like the two guys in the two rings and they go at it one on one. It's just a mess. A horrible, horrible in conception. Awful at the box office, and didn't produce a single good show.
They just got like an obsession of multi rings. It's almost like, did they get like a, you know, buy two get one free fucking offer? Like,
they
just got, like, we got all these rings, we've got to do something. Like, their obsession,
every fucking match type they can think of. Like the war games as well, which I do like the war games, but again, it's like multi-ring. It's just like, you can't predict what any of the matches are going. And he's like, oh, that could be interesting combos. No, never any interesting combos. And the people in the back didn't fucking know what was going on either. I think like one case and like fucking Booker T got drew out and like fucking Stevie Ray comes out instead. Oh no, we got it wrong. It was actually Cole, not...
Yeah, it was. Like, it was the wrong guy they called and Booker T just hit the ring anyway.
Yeah,
you probably hit on something there. You said about War Games. War Games drew and they probably misinterpreted... Hey, it's the fucking multi-rings.
It's the spectacle.
Yes, yeah. So every opportunity.
It had a structure in place.
The rules were irrelevant, that's the point.
You had a fixed number of opponents, which didn't, you know, go into the excess of like the 20s and 30s, whatever. And there was a set system to it. So, like, there was a story. You're getting two people, then three, then four. And you can follow the story at a time. When you get something like a Battle Bowl, where, like, it seems like even the bookers don't know what they're doing, that's where the problems begin.
But don't even just focus on the difference in numbers, G, when it comes to War Games as a comparison. The whole point of War Games was there were existing storylines that culminated in a War Games, whereas Battle Bowl was just a throw shit at the wall exercise.
Yeah.
And no, Lee Marshall, I do not care where the WCW Road Tour is going this week. Fuck you.
Steve Bocenik on the Facebook page says the worst was the blindfold match. The only thing it was useful for was to give it time for a beer run. There was very little action, and the only thing that would get the crowd involved was helping the face find the heel. Grapple and Apple on Pro Wrestling Only also says a Prince of Darkness match. Does anything even come close to this style of match in pure awfulness?
Two great emailers who can email in anytime they wish. I've talked about the blindfold match on previous podcasts, so I'm not going to go too over the top. All I'll say is that, by and large, I agree with both emailers there. I think it's a poor concept that doesn't lead to good matches. And the only reason it remotely got over was because of the psychology of Jake Roberts. And even then, Jake Roberts is so embarrassed by the episode that when he takes off the blindfold, he's laughing.
a great, great comedic end to the storyline where a man was blinded.
Yeah, because as someone who has spoken out over their fondness of the blindfold match from WrestleMania 7, my defence of it stemmed through, as Carl mentioned, the quality that, you know, Jake brought to it. Obviously, the concept of the match itself is absolutely fucking ridiculous. I don't know how many times more they did it after that match. Was that the only one?
They've done it again. They've done some on Raw, and they were using other companies again, like Smokey Mountain used it. A few other people used it. Phil Watts used to do them a little bit too.
Oh, yeah.
Were those white blindfolds?
Misplaced, if you want to say. Admiration for the match does stem through the fact that basically, you know, you need lemons to make lemonade, something like that. Well, he was given, you know, shit and orange peel. You know, that's what Jake was given. And it's a testament to Jake and to Martel as well that they were able, they made the best of a bad lot. And like, I think that they turned around for what could have been a match where it could have absolutely 100% killed the crowd and could have been silent. Jake the Snake was smart enough to try and work it to the point where he goes, okay, I'm going to try and make it an audience participation match.
Fucking embarrassing. This is a match you don't want your non-wrestling fans to be in the room when it's happening. Yeah. It's fucking embarrassing. It's stupid. Fuck that shit.
What are you going to do with the blindfold match? Oh, look, here's two pricks with hoods on in a litter in a, looking like they're stumbling around in the dark.
Jingus at Pro Wrestling Only says, there's WCW Bash at the motherfucking Beach 99, the Junkyard match. This one had it all. Confusing and or non-existent angle to explain why it took place. Stupid illogical rules which made figuring out how to win the match overly complicated and dumb. Consisting entirely of literal garbage brawling with plunder shots, stretched out over a fucking endless, agonizing eternity of time. Bad camera work and worse lighting which meant you couldn't see a goddamn thing. Lousy special effects which never worked right. No list of participants, so even the announcers didn't know who was in the match, nor even how many guys are out there. Wrestlers just aimlessly brawling instead of trying to actually win. Absolutely nothing of value being given to the winner. Brian Knobbs being a dick and trying to hurt people. At least a couple of dangerous spots where it was legitimately possible that someone could have died on live pay-per-view, and multiple serious injuries to about half the wrestlers. A colossal waste of money on the set, effects, and a helicopter, and the Parker wearing street clothes with a mask on top. Actually, that last part was kind of cool, but believe me when I say it was the only cool part.
I'm going to say it almost sort of epitomises the scrap heap that that company was becoming at the time. The emailer there is referenced about how it's all just visually terrible, which it is. But I think the biggest sort of sin for it, if you like, is the fact that it depleted an already pretty shitty roster, or what was becoming a pretty shitty roster.
I can't even explain why, but like just thinking of that match, and it's probably just good, you probably got this on your list anyway. Maybe it's a good time to segue, but for some reason, this match just immediately made me remember the highway.
I was thinking the same thing.
The Dustin Rhodes match.
I was thinking the same thing.
Yeah, in the fucking Dustin Rhodes in the fucking truck. Was it with Buckhouse?
Blacktop Bully.
Yeah.
You're thinking of the King of the Road.
King of the Road.
Yeah, the fucking truck. The moving fucking truck. It's like, get to it. It's ridiculous.
K.O. Barcy on WrestlingForum.com says, boy, the first two in Sentence really had some awful gimmick matches. Match took place in the back of a fenced off 18-wheeler truck. Both guys started at the back and you had to make it to the front and blow a horn located there to win. It was shitty brawling mostly. You could barely see anything, and the truck had haystacks scattered everywhere. Oh, did I mention this truck was in motion? Yeah, it was out, driving around buttfuck nowhere while these guys were going at it. WCW hired a helicopter crew to shoot it from above and a police escort. At one point, the truck gets stuck in traffic as it's going.
Yeah, I know. It's great.
It gets stuck in traffic as it's going through a trailer park. Bully takes a bump when the truck makes a sharp turn. Eventually he blows the horn and wins. The funniest part, both guys bladed during the match, which was a big no-no at the time in WCW, and were promptly fired after the event. I think deep down WCW was offended by what took place and fired them to salvage their dignity. PSF on the UK fan form also voted for this one. A match in the back of a truck? Why? Bloody daft, and if I remember correctly, both were fired straight after the match for blading. Surely the match wasn't live, was it? Heenan ripping the piss out of trailer parks is the only highlight. Still, without this match, Rhodes may have been stuck in WCW mid-card for a few more years, and Goldust may not have been a thing. So I guess you've got to look at the silver lining in these clouds. Yeah, this match is a disaster.
At least on Dustin's part, he bladed deliberately. That's him getting out of that fucking shit.
Well, this is the thing. Mike Graham, the aforementioned Mike Graham, told them to do it, and then they were all three of them got fired for it. So the conspiracy theorists at the time were trying to say that this was a way to try and get the Rhodes contract off the books, because they thought that if they fired Dustin, Dusty would go too. So,
yeah. Oh, see, I thought you were going to say it was Mike Graham's revenge on Dusty for leaving Florida.
I can't state how awful this match is. This is the one point when fucking Blacktop Bully, we're long removed from the days of Smeesh, of Demolition. And it's like, one point when he's standing on like a metal grid, and the truck stops, and he takes a flip bump in the hay, and just to sell the motion. And it's going through the trailer park, and fucking Heenan is just crass, because it's in Tupelo, and it's driving through, and Heenan's just like, oh look, that's a Mississippi condo over there. He talks about how the truck probably smells like Dusty Rhodes' living room. He's great in this match.
Was this after the OJ chase?
Yeah,
yes it was. It's like, literally, they saw that and thought, let's do a match. Yeah. Where we watch it by helicopter. It'd be fucking sweet.
But the thing is, it's just, I just remember just watching this and just being stunned. But just the length of the match. This keeps going on and on. I swear to God, it's about 6 hours. You probably hit a nail on the head with the OJ thing, but like the obsession might be with Dustin, because he ended up doing the fucking same thing with him and Roddy Piper at WrestleMania 1 year later.
Yeah.
And the two going, oh, we gotta do a car chase at some point. We got a bit of car chase in the middle of a match.
They didn't even do a car chase. They used the OJ footage.
Ridiculous.
Again, if cage was like a monkey cage maybe, and there was monkey poo, and they were taking bumps in the poo, that would be really good.
Would it really?
What if there was dogs in the cage as well? Yeah. So it was like a kennel match, but in the truck.
But if you got monkeys or gorillas, you like, the monkeys and gorillas can get involved in the match as
they
well.
They can throw poo anytime.
They can throw poo. Yeah,
they can throw the poo.
Without being
in the event of a traffic jam, that's
release what the baboon.
What we do? Yeah, we do the kennel from hell match, but it's the zoo from hell. So instead of dogs, it's monkeys, and they're just throwing shit into the ring. Yeah.
The thing is that the commentators aren't even talking about what's actually happening in the fight. They're just talking about that, you know, oh my god, look at this, you know. We've got the helicopter here, mate. We've got to stop here for a church bus that's going past and shit like that. It's just completely ridiculous.
People just staring. Yeah. Just driving
there's a cyclist just like stopping and looking at what's going on. We move to more great WCW material here. Line of the Midlands on the UK fan forum brings up the San Francisco 49ers match from 2000 WCW, one of the highlights of Vince Russo era WCW, the match between Jeff Jarrett and Booker T. Four boxes, one in each corner of the ring. One box contains the world title and the other three contain things you could use in the match. The person who finds the box with the title wins. The first three boxes contain a blow-up doll, a framed picture of Scott Hall, and a coal miner's glove. The title actually fell out of the box and was passed to Booker T by the ring announcer. It also featured a runner from a midget called Beetlejuice and Scott Steiner at his most rampantly roided up best. I know that this sounds entertaining, but believe me, the presence of Jeff Jarrett took care of that. Apart from how awful the match was, the concept is flawed. Logical booking dictates that the title is in the last box. That takes any chance of drama out of the first three. Wrestling Oracle on WrestlingForum.com says, I'm sure the answer to this is some indie concept I've never heard of or forgot. But come on, guys, does it get any worse than the San Francisco 49ers match conceptually? Grab those barely hanging on cardboard boxes hanging from a string on a post that was supposed to act as a pole variant, but a hard enough Irish whip will knock it off the post. Hope that the world title is there, but hey, a picture of Scott Hall may be there too.
that's the thing. Why a picture of Scott Hall?
Why not?
That's the most ridiculous thing ever. That's probably like the one occasion where someone actually goes up to the box and actually wishes there was a fire contract. There was actually a pink slip going, that's the moment.
Scott Hall, who, if I'm not mistaken, having not appeared on TV since February, would be released weeks later.
Yeah. Well, the picture of him did get a hell of a pop.
It got a hell of a pop, and, you know, I'll always remember where I was the night that Dave Penza became world champion.
In words that have rarely been spoken, let's go back to TNA here for a little while. Bad News Gertner on TPWW says, my vote is for the Reverse Battle Royal. Grimace from Pro Wrestling Only says, the Reverse Battle Royal is just criminally awful and the stupidest match in history, maybe. Marrow on F4W says, terrible idea, even worse execution. You simply cannot suspend your disbelief enough for a match wherein the object is to enter the ring, and so a ton of guys simply brawl instead of all rushing in. At least the Punjabi prison match might have looked cool on paper. There is no booker on earth besides Russo who could come up with a Reverse Battle Royal than actually think it's a good idea and do it. John Carr 92 from the UK fan forum chimes back in and says, this was the first stage of a number one contender tournament. The flaws are instant. Picture this. You have wrestlers on the outside battling to get in the ring. This continues until 7 or 8 guys are in. After that, they have a proper battle royal. Yes, it totally defeats the purpose of the first stage. Granted, a match to get in the ring makes no sense at all to begin with, but what was the point in all that? When it gets to 2, it's a normal 1-4 match to determine the winner. The first one won the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Award for Worst Worked Match of 2006, and it's easy to see why.
I have an idea. I'm going to call it, it's the Reverse Iron Man. Okay, so basically the name of the game is you have to get yourself pinned the most amount of times. And the amount, like, if you get pinned the most amount of times, you win the belt.
I'd say that's a good idea. If Vince Russo was like the chairman of the FA, he would, for the FA Cup, to make it special, you've got to concede goals to win.
Yeah.
Fucking that's moron.
Intriguing.
Because everything that's the reverse obviously has to be better.
Well, they were successful. Look how the company's numbers reversed.
Well, yeah, exactly. Funnily enough. My I do have a fond memory of this match, funnily enough, where I do remember, really? I think it was on Bound for Glory, where Sanjay Dutt found himself with no one around to brawl and no reason not to get in the ring, so he just got on the ring apron and then slipped off and took a bump to the floor. It's like, that's such fucking brilliant. The X Division guys just knew that this was bullshit and they just acted accordingly. So in that regard, there's some fond memories, but as an idea, conceptually, this is a good candidate for worst ever. Moving along here, another TNA contribution. Poit on TPWW forum says, on their big January 4th show when they started competing with Monday Night Raw, it was Hogan's debut. The first match was the Asylum Escape Cage match. The match ended as a no contest as the guy who was supposed to climb out the cage physically couldn't do it, and the crowd began chanting, this is bullshit. It really was not a good start to the show, but they needed to do well. Wyatt Sheepmask on the UK fan forum says, special mention for that massive red birdcage thing they use. Two reasons for this. One, Homicide showed everyone on the first night of the so-called Monday Night War between Impact and Raw that escape is fucking impossible. And number two, you can't see shit. Jeffrey D.R. Walsh on the Facebook page with a great take here says, the one that really sticks in my mind is the Ultimate Escape Cage on the first live Impact of the Hogan-Bischoff era. The idea was simple enough. A load of X Division guys trying to escape from a cage, but whoever decided to stick that roof on the cage with that tiny hole managed to totally kill the match dead, as it looked like some crude steel penis with the competitors attempting to escape through the hog's eye. As if that wasn't bad enough, the X Division guys were all blown up so nobody could even get close to the exit to ejaculate themselves to freedom and victory. So the match pretty much had to be abandoned, all to be revealed as a way to kill time and build to the Jeff Hardy debut. Which, and if there's anything that is just perfect and just cements this, it was a cage match that ended in a DQ. That is just beautiful. That is beautiful.
When one emailer said about like how the cage match has been bastardized, I think it's got to be. I mean, yeah, we can joke about like the amount of ways that ladder match has been joked around, but the cage gimmick has just been like just destroyed. It's a fucking cage. There's not really much you can do with it. It's a cage, but yet they keep trying to find new and like retarded ways. I mean, to like mix results, you know, like obviously Hell in a Cell's good, War Games has its moments, but there is one which I will give a buy just because it's so bad it's good. Okay, like a really cheesy B movie. It was the one with the electricity,
the Chamber of Horrors,
the one with the chamber, which this one's a buy. This is one where it's like it's so bad I will leave it in existence. Like Shockmaster, you don't want to get rid of that because it's so fucking funny. You want to keep it in history. You don't want to eradicate it. This one's just so funny, just with the whole fucking, like, the switch.
Yeah.
The switch that falls down halfway through.
Read it. Project Humanoid on the FOW board says, take a goofy Halloween premise and mix it in with grade school play-level production and you get this heap of garbage. The Chamber of Horrors match wasted Sting and the Steiner brothers, who are completely out of place here. It also wasted Cactus Jack and Vader, who fit the motif, but still deserve better. It wound up being the professional wrestling equivalent of an Ed Wood schlock horror movie, but without the charm. Rick Steiner was almost crushed by the electric chair, excuse me, chair of torture, and then Abdullah the Butcher had to flop around like a beach whale while buzzing sounds and pyrotechnics went off around him after Cactus accidentally threw the switch, which kept falling into the on position anyway. Matt Athlin on the Facebook page says, not only did this match make light of day only once, not only did this match involve seven of the biggest names in wrestling and El Gigante, it also had a plethora of botch moments, mostly with a giant switch. Honestly, how are we to buy Abdullah being electrocuted and not baking like a potato? Ladies and gentlemen, WCW brings you the Chamber of Horrors from Halloween Havoc 91. Oh, and this was the opener.
Let me get this straight. A scaffold match insults your intelligence.
Yeah, yeah.
This one's just so ridiculous. It's humorous. There's no danger in it at all. It's fucking ridiculous. It's just
danger to your vibrates.
It's just worst thing, as I said, with Abdullah the Butcher like selling it and the shock noise, like that always bothered me. Like even just little things like with the Mounties freaking shock stick. When every time they do that and you just hear the sound effect, it's just like, oh my God, like how the hell is wrestling still around?
Yeah, this is a particularly awful match. A horrible concept as a one-off. Mm. Oh, special attraction. Dreadful.
They built it so much as a special attraction, and when it happens, it's the most ridiculous.
The fact that Abdullah the Butcher was supposed to do a stretch job and didn't want it, so he just got up and no-sold everything anyway. So it's like, that's just like the cherry on the shit sundae, if there ever was one.
I'm in disbelief with Kieran, really, on this sort of... The fact that the scaffold is, like, the worst thing in the world, but this has some form of merit in any sense. No, there is no merit to this. The switch falling over is a clusterfuck, but it's not actually very fun. It's like, oh, God, this just looks stupid.
Yeah.
And, oh, look, there's a fat man slobbering in the chair. you want to talk embarrassing for your friends or family to see? Mm. The Chamber of Horrors is it for me.
Yeah. Poor Jim Ross on commentary. I have to fucking make something of this. Speaking of hokey electric sounds, we go back to TNA, of course, for the electric cage. Fake plastic trees on Pro Wrestling Only says, the worst gimmick matches to me are the ones that do not deliver what is advertised. The matches that are gimmicks within gimmicks, and those make the entire match laughable and pointless. A good example of this is the electrified cage match that happened at one of TNA's Slammiversary events. It was Team 3D versus LAX, and at one point in the match, Homicide is thrown into the cage, and the arena lights begin to flicker. A buzzing sound is heard over the arena's PA system, and Homicide does a weird gyrating on the cage. This, of course, leads to the crowd booing very loudly, and an entire arena chanting, Fire Russo. The worst part of this is that the special cage was built for this gimmick match, and this gimmick cage was used throughout the entire show. So TNA, a company that was barely turning a profit at the time, spent money on a new cage, only to piss off the fans, not deliver on the gimmick, and embarrass the company yet again. I am sure there are others, but yes, the worst are the ones that do not deliver on the gimmick promised. MIM731 on the UK fan forum says, has anyone mentioned the TNA electrified cage from lockdown? It was obviously not electrified, and they had to play a humming noise of fake electricity in the arena, while the lights flickered and LAX and Team 3D had to sell being electrocuted on contact with the metal, doing fake convulsions and terrible facial expressions. Utter dross. And Fragile X on the TPWW forum says, TNA has the trademark on this podcast. Reverse Battle Royal, King of the Mountain, Electric Cage.
It's like a not-so-greatest-hits list from TNA, isn't it?
Actually, what I like about this even more, it's not just the horrific hokey buzzing or the fact that the lights were flickering on and off like they didn't have enough power in the building because they're so fucking cheap that they couldn't pay the bill. What I love more is the fact that at one point they start climbing on the cage when they put rubber gloves on, and it's like, what the fuck is this?
At least it's probably the one time where the classic Devon cell probably actually matches the match stipulation.
I think I've got to take another quick break from TNA. There's only so much of that stupidity I can handle. We'll get to JN Lister from the UK fan forum here. He says, not so much the worst, but definitely amongst the most what the fuck, is the disco ladder match, both for the concept and the setting. It was the first ever all-star show on ITV, coming the week after one of the most atrocious Big Daddy six-mans ever. So Dixon was going all out to make a splash. He ran the Hippodrome nightclub in London, had an opening match with a young Jushin Liger, then a match with Mark Rocco on ITV for the first time in a few years, then main evented with Kendo Nagasaki returning to TV for the first time in 8 years. Except that wasn't enough. So they had a ladder match where you had to retrieve a golden record. Oh, and during the match, disco lights were in full effect and the sound system played classical music. Suffice to say, Kent Walton was utterly baffled throughout.
What did you get if you retrieved the gold disc?
I assume that means you've got platinum.
You get a record contract, like 3 count.
This is the period, because obviously the ladder match originated over here during these ridiculous spectacles, and Bruce Hart took it to Calgary and did it there, and then Bret Hart claimed it was his own idea and brought it to the WWF and felt offended that it was ripped off by him when Sean did it. But I've seen this. It is bizarre. It's just a really weird... It feels like a match is happening at a kid's birthday party, to be honest. Ironically enough, at a disco. So, yeah, very, very strange. There's a section here that I've called the obscure that we'll get to later on, but that's one of the first ones. Moving on to another one, actually. Not J Tab from Pro Wrestling Only says... XPW once booked a buck naked match where the object was to strip your opponent naked in the middle of the ring. Now obviously two women willing to take part in such a match aren't going to be highly trained grapplers, but given that Rob Black was a pornographer and both Lizzie Borden and Veronica Kane had a history in adult entertainment, the audience were clearly expecting some nudity. The execution was terrible. Borden and Kane were both members of heel factions, so the crowd ended up babyfacing one of them for interfering and trying to help Kane, despite them being massive heels in a previous segment. It got to the point where Borden was just about to strip Kane and the lights went out. When they came back on, Kane had vanished. The Enterprise took credit for this to Big Heel Heat, which was then promptly wasted in the next match as Enterprise member Steve Rizzano jobbed to a man in a monkey suit, literally billed as a monkey, in a comedy match. What they managed to do was annoy their entire audience, taking away any reason to trust XPW stipulations in the future, accidentally babyface their main heel faction, and wasted any heel heat with a throwaway 3-minute match in the next segment.
My argument there would be, what had XPW ever done prior to that to merit anyone trusting them on anything?
Yeah, exactly. Like, was anyone surprised by the lack of quality from anything that came out of XPW?
Yeah, but you think you get a set of tits once in a while.
But surely the only claim to fame they had was that.
Tits.
Yeah. And they couldn't even provide that for you.
Bad form.
Bad form. Talk about...
What, one giant tit running the company not enough for you?
No.
Okay.
We'll move to a more well-known one. Jazzy Jeffers on the UK fan forum says... I see all of your ridiculous gimmick matches and raise you by Dusty's pre-War Games creation, the Bunkhouse Stampede. The rules are simple. It's substantially a battle royal in a steel cage, with the winner getting a giant brass cowboy boot. Yes, as if getting your opponents out over the top rope wasn't tricky enough, now you have to get them out over the top of a steel cage or through the door, with both feet hitting the floor. The concept lasted 4 years before being killed off, the final one going out on pay-per-view from the Nassau Coliseum and can be watched on the network. It's Dusty, naturally, post-Horseman Lex Luger, Arn Anderson, Tully Blanchard, the Warlord, the Barbarian, Ivan Koloff, and Road Warrior Animal... Having already been through qualifying bunkhouse stampedes on house shows, no doubt overcoming such bunkhouse legends as Pistol Pez Watley, Paul Gardner, and the Jeffers brothers, all in their bunkhouse gear trackies, apart from Lex, who obviously had to show off the total package. Bumbling and brawling around a steel cage for 10 or so minutes, occasionally climbing the cage before realizing that the aim of the match is to stay in the cage, and half-heartedly brawling before retreating to the safety of the ring. Most of the eliminations happened somewhat anticlimactically through the cage door, and surprisingly, the winner of the giant boot, as with all the other three, is Dusty himself, who once again has to figure out what he's going to do with four giant brass cowboy boots. Still, I'm surprised no one at TNA has attempted to shoehorn this into lockdown every year.
It is very Russo-rific.
Did he actually wear the brass boots? Because that'd be kind of cool.
I don't believe he did.
Get like dancing in them or something?
Yeah, no.
It's a good gimmick. It's a good weapon.
Did that final one, the Bunkhouse Stampede on pay-per-view, which was the WF put the Royal Rumble opposite on free TV and just killed him on pay-per-view, featured Dusty Rhodes winning to a chorus of boos.
The concept behind it is terrible. If I'm not mistaken, doesn't it come down to him and the Barbarian from Powers of Pain? It's at the Nassau Coliseum. It's at the heart of WWF country at the time. It does a terrible buyout, as you say, because they put the Rumble against it. And I think the paid crowd was something like 8,000. So it was somewhere around half the capacity of the Nassau Coliseum. So the arena's blacked out anyway.
Barbarian looks sweet in some like bronze cowboy boots.
Mando on Pro Wrestling Only says, I feel bad taking pot shots at it after it suffered years of abuse and essentially become a punchline itself, but the coal miner's glove match. In theory and in execution, looking at you, Jake and Sting, it's a tough sell. As young kids, though, my brother and I, while not understanding what made a coal miner's glove special or dangerous, found easy enough to replicate at home wearing standard winter mittens, pretending to adorn the feared elusive coal miner's glove while wrestling and fighting our pillows and each other.
Spin the wheel. Make the deal.
Should have been like a knight's fist of armour or something.
Oh,
at least that's
a
dangerous
gauntlet.
Coal miner's glove just
what,
sounds
to
like
go with the boot.
Yeah, exactly. Dress Barbarian and like RoboCop.
So if you're a really good wrestler, you can eventually build up an entire suit of armour.
Coal miner's glove just sounds like some kind of sexual manoeuvre to me.
It does. Yeah. It does sound like a backdoor entry kind of.
Hey baby, I'm gonna give you a old coal miner's glove.
Tommy on the UK fan forum says three words which must suck the life out of all wrestling fans is on a pole. It's not too bad if it's a weapon which you can use if you get it, I guess. Except you have 20 minutes of some daft arsehole stood on the second rope brushing some ten a penny object with his fingertips with no drama. Then when they do get it, both people seem to be free to use it, so it defeats the whole be the first to get it, as it has no real advantage fucking ever. It just sucks the life out of a concept of a wrestling match and adds no big spots or fresh drama like, say, a ladder match or cage match does. It can be rebranded however you like to drop the on a pole name, such as the coal miner's glove or biker chain and so much other shit. If you put a weapon on a pole, it's going to be the shit. It's going to be so shit. Nothing makes me despise wrestling more than putting things on a fucking pole, except perhaps putting a woman on a forklift, but that just makes so little sense let's not even go there. There's a second layer of hell to the on a pole bollocks though, those ones where you get the thing to win. At least with a weapon, once we are done with all the pole climbing, we get back to some normality, but just winning by getting something from a pole, as all of the dull, turgid wank of the first layer of wrestling's pole based hell, with the added factor of no enjoyable finish. Two people on a ladder fighting for a belt has scope and drama and tension. Two people stood on the second rope reaching for a pink slip or a pinata just makes me want to slip into a coma. Glenrick Pilton's on the UK fan forum says it has to be Judy Bagwell on a pole. What in the right royal fuck was all that about? On a pole matches are ridiculous anyway, but why would you hoist a woman in midair? She wasn't even on a pole, she was on a bloody forklift. I thought the whole point of pole matches was to retrieve a weapon and incapacitate your opponent. What would Canyon have done if he retrieved Judy, followed her up and trapped Bagwell in the head with her arse? Not only that, but you have the shit arsery of David Arquette storming the ring and attacking Bagwell with the most dangerous of weapons, a yellow hard hat, which Bagwell saw like he'd been stabbed with a pickaxe. What a bag of wank.
Absolutely, I'm sure there's a Gold Club joke in there somewhere. All those references are poles, but I'll leave that for someone else. The pole concept is pretty shitty. Let's be honest about it.
A few podcasts ago, when you suggested the idea of an all pole pay per view, what was it you called it?
Pole position.
The pole match as a concept is bad enough, but let's just go through some of Vinnie Roux's greatest hits where a pole is concerned. Viagra on a pole.
Oh, yeah.
Pinata on a pole. Judy Bagwell on the forklift. There may have been barbecue sauce on a pole when they were doing the Oklahoma gimmick. I may be getting confused with something else, but yeah, it wouldn't shock me if they'd done that one as well.
Pole on a pole.
Pole on a pole.
A pole on a pole could have been like Ivan Putski sitting on top of the pole. I don't know.
MOS on Pro Wrestling Only says, I do not get the ambulance match and the stretcher match gimmicks. What is the point of them apart from making the no holds barred concept unnecessarily contrived? Where, instead of being brutal with chairs and stuff, you just keep trying to gently wheel someone on a stretcher past the yellow line, trying to throw them in an ambulance. Screech from TPWW says, I never liked the stretcher match. Seems really dumb to have to push your opponent across the line to win after you've incapacitated them. Thoughts on this? I actually don't mind stretch matches when they're done right, although I'm not a big fan of the finish line aspect of the match.
Yeah.
But
did Lesnar and Big Show?
Yeah.
Yeah, Judgment Day.
Yeah, that was a good match. I enjoyed that match a lot.
I like that one.
There is potential for good stretch matches. I don't think the concept in itself is bad, but it's much more effective to me if the stretcher goes out through the curtain and you don't see them revive at all. Just the element of, okay, that you have to go to the back and
As opposed to the yellow finish line.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. It's just that thing of the vision. You don't see them afterwards, so you assume that they, because they were taken back on a stretcher, they have to go to the ambulance, and that thing of letting your imagination do the work for you, as opposed to you tip them over the line. Well, that's great. That doesn't really accomplish fuck all. How have you beaten them through this wacky rule? You know what I mean? Big Vic on TPWW says, I enjoy boiler room brawls, but the concept is pretty dumb. Why not just run out of the room as soon as possible?
There's no fucking place for logic.
As Russo said, what is logic in a fake business?
It's the name of his book, isn't it?
Yeah. Gorgeous Leon Newstead from TPWW says, I know the Dudleys and Hardys had a great tables match at the Rumble in 2000, for instance, but the stipulation is fucking idiotic. A guy goes through a table and he loses? What does that do for anyone? It's almost completely up to chance. A casket match? This is like a rapid fire here. A casket match? Okay, well, let's just murder fuck kayfabe and make our product look as dumb as possible. An inferno match? What in the absolute hell is that? Why are pro wrestlers on the biggest stage lighting themselves on fire? A buried alive match? Oh, wait. Three of these four steps have to do with The Undertaker and they're fucking stupid. He did lend himself to some piss poor matches.
The other ones like the table and the casket, I never really kind of gave two shits about, really, to kind of think about it. But the buried alive one, yeah, that's a stupid one in just concept alone. It's just like, so you're burying someone alive. Yeah. It's like, well, you're not, are you?
You went to murder.
You're not really. So it's like, so what's the point? It's just that one I never kind of, but casket I've never kind of, like, it's kind of actually kind of strange. It's got a bit similar to a stretcher match, really. You never assume as soon as they've locked them in a casket, it's like, well, that's it, they're dead. They're dead and they're going to get buried alive. It's like, no, it's just, you're just putting them in a casket. It's, I'm guessing it's a metaphor for the Undertaker. But when it's the buried alive, there's not much of a metaphor there. They're getting buried, apparently. So it's just like, yeah.
Mountains of dirt.
Yeah, mountains of dirt. It's just, the buried alive one particularly. Table's just like, I don't know. Is the table one any more or less ridiculous than a ladder match?
I'd say, especially in early conception, like, okay, the casket match, what got it over is like, the fear the heel had of going in the caskets, and it's like, so it played into the take gimmicks or whatever. Yeah. The trouble with the ladder match, with the tables match, is it's been bastardised and used as an easy out to do a job without losing. So.
Exactly. Yeah. In some ways, it's not the concept that's the issue, it's the application of it. And I think that's the case with the tables match, where you have instances where Sheamus wins the world title when Cena falls through a table by accident. Jesus. Shit like that. That's what I don't like. That first one, where it's about, you have to put the guy to the table, it's just a war. And it's sold appropriately, like it's a big deal and a brutal match. I got no problem with that at all. The concept that I have no issue with, because you can actually build drama with the false breakages and stuff like that. You can do stuff with it. One of those though that gets more than one mention is the Inferno match. Otto Den Vons on the UK fan forum says, despite the relatively logical way the first one came about with the "when we were kids you burned down our gaff leading to our parents dying and my horrific psychological trauma" thing, the whole concept is dangerous, stupid, and limits what the guys in them can achieve. Wrestling is a hazardous thing to do at the best of times, before adding real fucking fire into the equation. Maybe there's an element of intrigue before the first one in 98, but setting someone on fire, albeit in a relatively controlled way, is outright stupidity and negates a fundamental principle of wrestling and life: under-promise and over-deliver. There have been only four in history, but they end in such a naff way every time. The act of being set on fire never fails to look contrived and makes the guy receiving the flames look stupid as anything. See Kane leaving his arm in the fire and waiting ages while looking at his arm Unforgiven, or his boot getting stuck in the fire on that one they did on SmackDown the next year. These rubbish finishes come after action so plodding it makes Big Daddy look rapid, due to the fire ensuring movement is limited and having guys sweat loads with difficulties breathing. There has never been a good one, ever. The best thing that has ever happened to one of these things was Paul Bearer getting busted open by a drum kit, and they didn't even need to have a ring surrounded by flames to do that. Who thought of this shite? I'm sensing Russo had a big part to play, although he never confirmed it anywhere. Either way, this nonsense reeks of him. And a Sting fan on TPWW says, the Inferno match is up there for me as well. I could see it as some kind of one-off, but beyond that, I just don't get it. And to be honest, you're never going to have a satisfying wow ending to it.
I'm surprised, actually, with the Inferno match, only from the point of, I didn't actually realise there'd been four of them, because I can only recall two, and they're the two that the emailer specifically referenced. I'm not sure what the other two were.
Kane wrestled MVP on like an Armageddon.
And also there was one with Bray Wyatt.
Bray and Kane?
Yeah.
Was the other one.
Oh, there's a reason I can't remember either of those. They're shit. the first one is not a good match, don't get me wrong. But, we talk about any sort of sense of a build and something seeming natural. And in that sense, it did, with the backstory involved. and all that that entailed. If it had just been a sort of a one and done, you'd think fine. But you know, to revisit it, and then obviously to revisit it again with two matches there that I'd completely forgotten about, which just shows how significant they were. That combined with how poor the matches are, because as the emailer referenced, it does limit what people can do. It just sort of adds to a perfectly crappy storm.
Yeah, what pissed me off was the way the flames used to like go up and down when they took bumps.
Rhythmic bursts of flames.
He did have the great spot when Taker did the dive over the top rope and the flames onto Kane and Vader, but that's about it.
Yeah,
and of course the aforementioned drum bashing.
But yeah, I mean, yeah, I'm glad the one guy mentioned it with a contrived way in which I think, was it the second one when Kane gets his arm?
No, that's the first.
Was it the first one? Yeah, because it's just like Kane's arm being in there for what seems like an eternity. Yeah. It's probably like 5 seconds. But it's just, and then it's like, oh, guys, he's waving his arm, oh, and just runs to the back, and it's just like, fucking hell.
Yeah, I'd
rather the switch just fall down.
Yeah, the contrived thing for me is when you can tell that the part of their body's being gimmicked for it to get set on fire. Yeah, like MVP getting squirted on the back with the liquid so that his back can go on fire, or Kane's arm being under the ring suspiciously for a period of time before it gets set on fire. That stuff doesn't look good. It's time for another adrenaline rush here, those who go to TNA. GPW Kristen Zane on the UK fan forum says, if in 2010 there was a match where four knockouts had to obtain keys to unlock boxes, the thing was nobody knew which key opened which box, and inside the four boxes were a tarantula, a contract for a match of their choice, the right to perform a striptease or be fired, and the TNA knockouts title. The champion was involved in this farce and didn't leave with the belt. Jimmy Redman on Pro Wrestling Only says, now TNA is a goldmine of shitty stips, but undoubtedly the worst, the absolute worst stipulation in the history of organized human society is the abomination that was the Knockouts Lockdown Lockbox Challenge. Allow me to explain. In the words of Jeremy Borash at the time, the rules are simple. Tara/Victoria was Knockouts champ at the time and was technically defending the title in this match. There are four lockboxes. One has the Knockouts title, one has a title shot of your choosing like Money in the Bank. One has Tara's pet spider that she brought to the ring at the time. One has an order to go to the ring and strip down to your bra and pants. Yes, this is a Russo match. How could you tell? So there's an 8-person tag team match between the girls. Elimination rules, but whoever gets a pinfall gets a key to one of the boxes, and also has to leave the match along with whoever they pinned. So four girls get the four keys in the match. I'm pretty sure it was Tara, Angelina Love, Velvet Sky, and Daphne. So the match ends, and then later on, in the main event segment of Impact, this was head-to-head with Raw, by the way, during that period, they use the keys to open the boxes. So Tara goes first and gets her spider. This is how she lost the Knockouts Championship of the World. She seems inordinately happy about this because she loves her pet spider more than the title. Angelina gets the title. This is how she, as a babyface, mind you, wins the Knockouts Championship of the World by opening the right box by chance. Velvet gets the title shot, which at least furthers her feud with Angelina. Daphne, of course, gets the order to strip. She eventually goes to the ring, reluctantly, but before she can strip, Lacey Von Erich runs down and does her own striptease voluntarily, because she's a slutty whore like all women, am I right? Bro. This is how the show goes off the air. To this day, I hear the words, the rules are simple, and just lose it, because it takes me back to this show, just so amazing on all of the Russo-rific TNA levels.
This whole concept, I guarantee, was purely devised so Russo could get the announcers to say, coming up next, we're going to find out what's inside the Knockouts boxes. That's it. That is it.
Just for the one line.
Yeah. I would have liked, though, if, like, in one of the boxes there was a python, and, like, when you open it, it jumped out and bit you.
Like the wedding of Savage and Liz.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, like, the snake jumped out the box and bit him on the face or something. That'd be sweet.
So Jake came out.
they can't even get the sort of the pro wrestling 101 element to it right. Where after all that, surely the last box that's opened is the one with the belt in. They don't even get that bit right. That's how fucking clueless these people
because
are.
That's not what the money was. You see, Carl, the money was one of them getting their kit off,
which didn't
that,
happen.
That means way more. If a tarantula means more than the belt, then a woman getting a kit off definitely means more than a belt.
Yeah. So this was absolutely horrific. I'm not sure about the worst gimmick concept ever, because it only happened once, thankfully. It's pretty bad. It's a bad, bad angle. I'm not justifying it at all. And thankfully, we never saw this again, is my point. Yeah.
And it ends with another proud moment for the Von Erich family.
This is the Divas version of that frickin' the Scott Hall picture, basically.
This is the Divas version of it, basically.
I'm going to graduate with a picture of Scott Horsley.
That'd be great.
At least there's some continuity there.
A picture with the same pose, but how he looked at the time. So he just had grey hair.
he just hands them out. He just hands out.
Keeps taking a new picture every year and sends it to the rest of the company.
It's his Christmas card photo.
Oh, fucking.
He sends it to everyone.
Bollocks, it just wheeled Dave Penns out and he can pick up the belt off the floor and hand it to someone as well.
Let's stick with TNA here because Nitro from WrestlingForum.com has one of my personal favourites, the Dup Cup.
The what?
The Dup Cup.
The Dup Cup.
Oh, okay, so you missed this, G, from the early days of TNA. It was TNA's version of the hardcore division. Anyone could enter themselves into the match, from wrestlers, referees, commentators, to backstage workers, and the only way to win the match was to score 10 points. The winner won the Dup Cup and a date with Fluff Dup, the Dup's manager and sister, who they teased an incestuous relationship
what?
With.
What was the name again?
Fluff Dup. The tag team of the Dups was Bo Dup and Jack Dup.
What are you talking about?
Bo Dup was Trevor Murdoch, so who would go on to great fame
as the Sydney Redneck.
Yeah. That's
the
name of
it. G, it's worth remembering this is the same time where the TNA roster had cheeks.
And the midget beaten off in a trash can. Don't laugh at it, G. You're giving Russo what he wants.
Is it any wonder they had to leave the was it the Alabama Municipal Coliseum and go to the asylum?
Nitro says the rules of the match were, and again, they really were quite simple. If you put someone through a table, it's 2.5 points. If it's a burning table, you get 5 points. If you put your opponent's head in the toilet, it's 2.5 points. If the toilet has shit in it, it's 3.5 points.
Why is it
and a half?
because unless there is something on this match, which you'll tell me in a minute, Liam, unless there is something you can do in this contest that equals half a point to get to that round number, then the half points are surely irrelevant.
We'll get to that. If you grab a woman's ass, it's 2.5 points. if you grab a man's ass, it's 3.5 points.
This is starting to sound like my Saturday nights out.
Oh, God.
If you punch...
Could you imagine that? Just as you're in the points position, go, right, I got to get a date with this fluffed up, right? But I need 3.5 points. So I've got two options to me. I can either shove someone's head down a shitty bog, or I can grope a man's ass. Either way, to the toilet it is.
Can't you imagine the drama, though, where two guys are on the verge of winning, and they both die for the guy's ass cheeks? So who's going to grab the ass?
Whilst he's at the urinal taking a piss.
Yeah, the referee's just there watching in slow motion.
But wait,
the cheek first.
There's more. If you hit Jeremy Borash, you get 2.5 points. If you hit the ticket lady, you get 2.5 points. If you have sex with a farm animal during the match, you get 2.5 points. If you spank your opponent with a stick horse, you get 2.5 points. If the person likes it, you lose 2.5 points. If you
well, that's a risky one. I'm not doing that.
If you introduce an opponent to Jay, whoever, whatever that is, it was never explained, you get 2.5 points. If you cry like a big old pussy, you lose 5 points. If you take a weapon from a fan and use it, it's 1 point. If you stick your opponent's head in a cotton candy machine for one full rotation, it's 10 points. And an automatic victory. The Dup Cup, ladies and gentlemen. This is I on the list.
Who devised this?
Well,
Russo and Ferrara are with the company at this
they
point.
They are with the company
at
the time.
Yeah.
This is just awful.
If
I'm not mistaken, Ferrara's on commentary as well.
He is, yeah, with those fucking dreadlocks.
And bear in mind, folks, this is during the phase of the weekly pay-per-views as well.
Yeah, who wouldn't want more?
How did we not mention that during the TNA podcast?
For good reason.
What is this? Oh, my God.
We go to Chucks4W from the FOW board and says, TNA's last rights match. It's a casket match, but the casket is in the ring, so they only have half a ring to wrestle in, and it's on a giant base that gets hoisted up 6 feet at the end. Oh, and there's a tombstone. Not a pile driver, an actual tombstone.
It could have been worse. Like, it could have been a reverse casket match where you both start in the casket.
Yeah, fight to get out.
It's almost essentially is, because you think, like, a casket usually gets lowered, whilst this is a casket that gets raised. So it's kind of technically almost a reverse casket match. It's the best they could do. They only have so much money. They got to save the money for,
I believe, you know, this was the first Fire Russo chance.
Yeah, this was the debut of them, yes.
And this was the slow self respect death of Sting, I think, as well.
Yeah, that promo we talked about, you will die, Chris. British Beef on the UK fan forum says, the first thing that immediately came to mind was the Asylum match concept from WCW in the year 2000. I've had vague memories of it over the years, but just never bothered Googling it or seeking it out. If you watch the match, you'll see why. It was a circular cage dropped in the middle of the ring, which left absolutely no room for manoeuvring in the already smaller WCW rings, and the wrestlers had no access to the ropes. I have no idea how many of these they did, but I remember Scott Steiner being involved. Absolute toilet. So yeah, this was Tank Abbott, I believe, was the guy in the ring.
It was Tank Abbott. I don't think it was ever used on a pay-per-view. I think it was solely used on TV at the time.
I don't know. I've got a feeling it was on the Bash 2000, I want to say.
Are we talking Bash at the Beach or Great American Bash?
Great American. That was the show where they had like a stip in every single match.
But yeah, like the email said, you've already got the slightly smaller ring than the WWF one, and then you stick what would have been, what, about 8 foot diameter?
Yeah.
No more than that in the middle of the ring. They can't move. They can't do any fucking moves to each other. It's just punch and kick for however long you want the match to go. And there's the no talent bum Tank Abbott involved.
with Scotty and Tank in there, were they just literally like pressed up against each other anyway? You just couldn't move.
More or less.
I can top it. Great American Bash 2000 did in fact feature an Asylum match. Scott Steiner defeated Rick Steiner and Tank Abbott in a handicap Asylum match. So there was three of them in there.
It's hard to imagine how that company lost $83 million that year.
I know. Where it does the get expenditures more. Are going. This is weird. But the thing is, I don't know whether you kind of mentioned it or whether you're going to mention it, but WCW was fucking obsessed with cages. I mean, absolutely ridiculous. I still... We've gone through some bad ones. A lot of bad ones. But I still think one of the worst ones is the triple cage, or the pyramid of cages, whatever you want to... Yeah. I don't know what they fucking called it. That was just... Because they did it several times, didn't they?
Yeah, well, this is the thing. The one that I don't mind as much is the one they did at Slamboree when they had Arquette in there, and it was Paige, Jarrett, and Arquette, and they had to climb to the top of three cages to get the belt hanging from the ceiling. I didn't mind that one as much. What was awful... awful was Russo's revenge on Nitro when they had to like start at the top, I think, and then they had to get the belt and then bring it out through the front door. Fucking awful match, as with everything. And I seem to say I'm gonna make this a thing every week if I can. As with anything shit, the Harris boys are involved again. So the only intelligence in the whole match was Kevin Nash stood by the door just waiting for everyone else to do the work. Yeah. And come back down so he could just beat him up and take the belt.
And the way it ended was the four heels all almost collectively walking through whilst Nash holds the belt aloft.
Actually, Callum 1993 from the UK fan forum did say the triple cage in WCW has to be on the list. So to win, you have to climb to the top to retrieve the belt, come back down, and through the door. So logically, why wouldn't you just let someone climb to the top and wait by the door so you can just deck them and take the title? Stupid WCW logic. So Big Kev is ahead of the curve.
Yeah, Nash figured it all out. This adds extra how bad this concept was the fact that it was actually used in the movie.
Ready to rumble.
The Ready to Rumble as the main event match concept for the film. There's not even a measurable way of
to be honest,
dealing with this.
That's
the
not the downfall of that film.
there's not, but it's just the fact of like it was a clusterfuck in the real world, and it was a clusterfuck in the fucking film.
I'll see your Ready to Rumble and match it with No Holds Barred, the match, the movie. No, that's a top.
Have you seen Hogan in that film? Yeah,
but Ready to Rumble mocks the only people who'd be interested in watching
this,
the film.
This is true.
And we got Arquette becoming world champion off the back of it. It's just this symbiotic shitstorm that brews up around both elements.
We need to do a show based on wrestling movies at some
point. Hogan, though, what's his name in
Rip.
Rip.
Look, I'll be honest, this is getting far more credence than I really considered. I was just sort of throwing the two together in truth. But the triple cage match had been in WCW for years prior to that. We've already mentioned the match at Uncensored 96, and they used it in 88. They used it in 88 as the blow off.
It's Tower of Doom, right?
It's the Tower of Doom match.
Three Birds a Minute.
Yeah.
Garvin.
Three Birds, the Garvins.
I remember
Kevin
that.
Sullivan.
That's a bad match.
Road Warriors. Call off. It's a terrible. Well, it's the bash card where, as the blow off to the feud, which Ron Garvin is the first out of the cage, you know, and he helps his brother or son or whatever relation they are, helps getting his wife Precious away from Sullivan. If you cared for that feud, I personally didn't, but if you did, that's a nice story. And here comes Ron Garvin to turn heel on Dusty Rhodes and then promptly leave the company.
Mungo Chutney on the UK fan forum says, the Hog Pen match. with Triple H and Henry Godwin was horrific. Why even fight in the ring if the aim is to tip the other guy into a hog pen? I only saw this once.
It happened to Triple H, so I don't care.
Justified by the fact that Triple H is rolling around in shit.
Yeah.
Okay.
Don't care. I'm all right with it.
Yeah.
I can live with that.
I think there are worse than that, and in truth, I can't really even take much enjoyment out of the fact that that's what happens to Triple H, because let's be honest, he had a pretty good laugh at the rest of us ever since.
Yeah, exactly. Shit like that, probably why he did get his revenge on us.
Yeah,
so.
that and the Warrior job, yeah. We've been paying for ever since.
Yeah.
Sheesh and KOPF on TPWW says, what did suck though was the tuxedo match between the Fink and Harvey Wimpleman. Even the Fink sex appeal couldn't save this. So yeah, this was a weird one, because they did this. Actually, they put it on Raw, didn't they? If I'm not mistaken, they put this on Raw in 95, just, you know, real nadir in company history, if there ever was one. But I remember they filmed this, and Vince McMahon played it at his personal Christmas party to laugh at Finkel. It's like, that's pretty much all this was. It was just...
That's all anything he fucking...
It was just his own amusement, because, you know...
Is this worse than the Patterson Briscoe evening gown?
Luke Moore on Facebook says, two senior men having out in an evening gown match. Yeah, that one's awful. This is one of the worst gimmicks ever. Men in an evening gown match.
What one of the worst gimmicks for what, to me, is still a... incredibly poor pay-per-view.
Yeah, very underwhelming. Because it's 2000.
Yeah, at a time where the company could do very little wrong, they produced this turd.
Yeah, no, and it's for the illustrious hardcore title as well, which is gutting. From shoving, was it a Tampax in someone's mouth?
Oh, the sanitary towel to the face by Briscoe.
High spot.
Yeah. Noin from TPWW says, chairs match is pretty dumb. Are chairs the only foreign objects that are legal? The idea of someone getting DQ'd in a chairs match is upsetting. You're better off doing a no DQ match than just using chairs creatively.
Couldn't agree more. I think the one thing about a chairs match, in terms of the way it's been introduced in more recent times, and we're all in many respects, yeah, we grew up with the attitude here, so we're used to seeing sort of crazy stunts, multiple headshots, all that sort of thing. And, you know, you can completely understand why they don't do that now. I'm not going to advocate for the return of the chair shot to the head, but because it's a chair match and because of what you're used to seeing, or what you know, what you watched previously, the sort of the chair shot to the head is almost, in theory, what should be the payoff. And that's never going to be delivered for all the right reasons, but logic would then say to you, just don't fucking do it.
Yeah.
Don't book the match.
Or maybe you have to, like, fight in the match, like, sitting down the whole time.
Oh.
Like, face to face.
Yeah.
Like rock 'em, sock 'em, robot. Yes. You gotta knock the other one off the chair.
Yeah. Ladders, like, okay, it sounds stupid at first, but there's something to it. There's a psychology that you can work with. Tables, obviously, as you guys mentioned, being bastardized over time. Chairs, you're starting to push it. But a stairs match?
Yeah, that was bad. The stairs match.
Stairs. Tables, ladders, and chairs. And stairs.
SMW
fine print.
SMW fan on F4W says, I've yet to see a beat the clock match that wasn't utterly fucking stupid, because they set it up as, can this guy beat the clock? As opposed to, can either of these guys beat the clock? In other words, they telegraph the winners ahead of time, which sucks away any point of having a match. Hate it, hate it, hate it, I don't want to ever see it again.
Did the last time they did one, they actually did say whoever won?
I think they did, didn't they? At least the first one they did.
I've got a feel, I can't remember when it was, I've just got this memory of thinking, well, finally someone's actually bothered to address that.
Generally speaking, I'm not a massive fan of the concept at all, and I find it incredibly dull. But I think there've been a couple of instances where it's probably been used effectively. I think it tends to be more when it's along the lines of someone not necessarily after beating a time, but surviving for that length of time. For example, you know, I'm not saying it's, you know, outstanding television or anything like that, but to use Brian Kendrick as an example. You know, I thought that was a nice little piece of business, as JR would say on SmackDown, when they had him wrestle Kurt.
Yeah.
And he had to last the 5 minutes. And, you know, I think times like that, it's, you know, it's not going to, you know, change the business or anything like that, but I think there can be an element of drama to it that is effective, at least.
Mm. How about the Rodney Mack 5-minute white boy challenge?
I can never get past that period without old D'Lo Brown's promo when he comes out with the Singapore cane.
Yeah, as I said, JL's always been an advocate of timing the matches and so on. Like, you know, the amount of times when he just turn around and say, oh, this match is going to be a 15-minute time limit, and you just kind of go like,
Oh, really? And he kind of like, okay, that's the finish.
Well, when they mention it once,
he's been an advocate of, so like, it should always be mentioned in every match. It should be like, you know, when they do like, there's 5 minutes from lane, it should be with every match, and like, just so that when you eventually do that gimmick, it's not just like, it's not just on the nose and stuff. And like they said, there's so many different ways you can tell a story with the ticking clock dynamic to it, and it's just like I've always agreed with it.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of room there. Hey, you
they don't do it.
Stop
doing
so many fucking jobs for these guys on television sometimes, who knows. We're going to get to some of the more obscure ones here that we've got sent in. PTO on F4W says FMW H versus Hayabusa anus explosion death match. Mr. Ganesuke was dressed up as Hayabusa, with real Hayabusa was H, who was kind of like a slightly more gay-leaning Jeff Hardy, and part of their feud was a match where the loser guy's asshole dynamited. In practice, this means H got stripped to his thong and a weak firecracker set off between his butt cheeks. It's all real, all of it. Lost from Pro Wrestling Only.
Did they use a coal miner's glove to put it in?
I don't know. Lost from Pro Wrestling Only. Set also said FMW's famous anal bomb death match. Go ahead, Carl. And no, Pat Patterson was not the referee. Stephen Leon from the FWB board says Tiger Jeet Singh versus Atsushi Anita in a jungle death match. Basically a match in a ring with barbed wire instead of ropes set up in the middle of a jungle with timed explosions going off at various points. There's a lot of these that are
Do you feel like you want to reassess your statements on the scaffold match now?
No, I'm staying firm on the scaffold, but it's
this next one might change.
Did someone watch Rambo 2 before they came up with that match?
Merzbo from the UK fan forum says the alligator death match has to be up there. The thing is shitting itself instead of looking dangerous, and does fuck all while Mitsuhiro Matsunaga against the Shadow WX looks a tad suicidal because he knows how fucking awful the whole thing is. I'm partly mad about this because I bought it on VHS expecting so much more, but it did include adverts for some Joshi girls doing softcore porn.
Hang on, so it was an alligator?
Yes, I believe it was like the loser had to go in as an alligator. Again, nothing happened. Very unimpressive.
Was the alligator just shitting all over the place?
He looked like he was. He looked very uncomfortable. Ryan Strikes Back from the FLW board says the GWF bungee match is my go-to for who thought this was a good idea. For most of these other matches, I can at least believe they sounded good on paper for some reason. There's a bigger cage, there's some explosions, there's some real danger. But the bungee match, it's like, let's make a match where we have no good way to film it, where two guys can't really move or do anything but kind of lay on each other, and nothing really gets decided because the loser just sort of sways in the wind, not really hurt in any way. So this isn't global.
Wait, so hold on a sec. So what's the concept? So have they already bungeed, and they're basically hanging upside down and fighting, or is it the first person to push
it's two guys fighting in this little yellow thing. You can actually find this on YouTube. It's Chaz Taylor versus Stephen Dane, and they're fighting.
You'd rather watch the alligator match. Yeah.
They're kind of fighting, kind of on this thing, and they just have to kind of push each other off the thing and dangle there, and it's like really ineffective.
I'm like, shit.
Yeah. Ah. It'd been better if they left him there for next week's show. You know?
He's still there. Yeah. Blowing in the wind.
Defending champ.
I was like you. I thought if they're like they're both like bungeed and swinging around, and like you've got to wait to come in and swing in and take a shot at each other.
Oh, you had a pair of scissors.
Sid versus Arn.
Right. That could be on the pole, right? The scissors could be on the pole. That's below them.
No.
So instead of them climbing up the pole, they're kind of bungeeing down to the pole
to get the top of the scissors
so they can cut them off and
bind. It could be above a lake with alligators.
Yeah.
So at least the alligators in there are more natural environment. Probably feel more comfortable on TV. Yeah.
Paul Siebert from the FWB board says, the brawl for all has to be the worst gimmick concept ever. Even if you were a fan of boxing or MMA and really wanted to see who the toughest guy on the roster was, the fights were typically sloppy, slow, boring affairs, and the poorly conceived rule system was baffling. Landing a single takedown counted as much as outstriking your opponent the whole round, yet groundwork was banned. And whose bright idea was it to let Carl Ouellette fight when he was legit blind in one eye? This was a disaster for pretty much everyone the WWE wanted to push in it. Dr. Death, who's expected to win the whole thing, tore a hamstring and got knocked silly by Bart Gunn. Brakus, who was subject to months of coming soon vignettes, gets his ass handed to him by Savio Vega, and in the process injured his shoulder and knee, cutting his career short. Savio later injured his own arm in a fight with Draz, and his WWE career is effectively ended. A bout between Hawk and Draz ended in a tie, yet Draz advanced in the tournament while Hawk got injured and was off TV for weeks. Mark Mero, who made much of his past experience as a Golden Gloves boxer, gets his ass kicked decisively by Blackman and JBL. At the end of the day, Bart Gunn emerged as winner of the tournament, and what was his reward? Being put in a chute with Butterbean at Mania 15. and getting his head knocked off. He did write a much longer explanation, but I think that pretty much sums it up quite nicely for the Brawl for All. Any additional thoughts on this turgid, seemingly never-ending tournament in 1998?
That's the thing, isn't it? It just seemed to go on for so long.
Yeah. Although that first round when no one cares and they're chanting, "We want wrestling," and it's just awful.
To be fair, you know, on the last week's show, talking about... actually, no, we didn't mention... when Punk wanted to go to do the UFC walkout with Chael Sonnen,
yeah,
and Vince thought, "No, oh, someone's going to die." With all the injuries they suffered during the Brawl for All, I think it's a reasonable extrapolation. Is that the word?
Yeah.
Word, to assume, well, if these trained professionals are doing it, then yeah, someone could die. Because
look what happened when that fucking bunch of yahoos did it.
But is there ever been a bigger gimmick killer than this?
Yeah.
Tony?
Everybody looked like they weren't tough.
Yeah.
Which I think is the thing to me. The fact that Mero didn't do well at all. Dan Severn won one match with The Godfather and decided, "This fucking stinks, I'm getting out of it now because it just looks awful. I don't want my career." Shamrock didn't want any part of this either. Yeah, it was
well,
bad.
That's the thing, is that even...
I did love Bradshaw getting knocked out by Bart Gunn in the final. That was great.
That was wonderful.
Yeah.
But it does... It almost doesn't tick any of the boxes, does it? You know, it's not good boxing. If you like MMA, there's none of that to be found. And if you're a wrestling fan, you're not getting any of that either. So it's just a perfect storm of shitness.
Yeah.
Involving people who weren't over before the competition started anyway. And if it's even possible, they're even under by the time the competition finishes.
I think that this is a worthy kind of... It's a bit of a strange one to add in there because it's such a different dynamic when we're talking about worst gimmick concepts ever for a wrestling match, a work wrestling match. It's kind of hard to put this one on the same level, but it's an interesting candidate. I think it's appropriate now, as I see that time is going to be called very shortly on this one, to kind of go around the table and with our own personal nominations for what we feel is, of all the ones we've heard today, the one that we feel is the worst gimmick match concept in the history of this fine sport.
I just think Vince Russo's gimmick of being a writer is the biggest debacle of all.
After all the candidates we've heard today.
Yeah. I'm going to stick with the scaffold match being the one I hate the most, but because I hadn't heard about it until today, I will give special props to Fluff Dup.
Oh, the Dup Cup?
Yeah, the Dup Cup.
There have been so many terrible ones referenced there. And I can't believe that we didn't even mention the old no punching in the face from SummerSlam 92. I think I'm going to go with the Chamber of Horrors.
Yeah?
Yeah. On another day, it could be a different answer. There are just so many, as you referenced, Liam. But that's the first one that springs to mind when you put me on the spot.
Yeah, I think I'll go King of the Mountain just because... It's fucking retarded, and just the amount of times I repeated it, and we're obviously so proud of it.
Yeah, that's something like that.
Morons.
We've got it. We've got something here. This is something that we can really...
It's gold. To the point of, didn't they create a title?
Still there. It's still going on, yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
It's over.
I think the reverse battle royal has to take it from me. When I just think about just the general idea of... It's one thing...
Sanjay Dutt.
Yeah. The immortal image of him falling off. I'm trying to think of, like, okay, what is the gimmick match that achieves absolutely everything that wrestling is not about? Does it draw money? No. Can you put it on pay-per-view? No, you can't. Does it make the wrestlers look like they're any kind of talented human being? No. Your average asshole off the street can get into a wrestling ring, but these trained professionals can't. I think that has to take it from me. And the fact that they did this as a way to determine the challenger for the TNA Championship.
I actually just say this, because I don't want it to be forgotten. The fucking truck.
The King of the Road.
The King of the Road. The fucking
place.
Truck. We can never forget that.
Yeah.
The fucking truck.
The truck. The King of the Road. So we've gone through a lot here. We have gone through as much feedback as we have the time for today. If we didn't get to your feedback this time, we apologise. And I'd like to thank everybody who contributed and who is listening to this show right now. We will be back next week for G. John Chase.
Rip, Kieran. Rip. So much worse than Ready to Rumble.
For Carl Jones.
They didn't have to spend their budget on the polls because Bischoff got them free from the Gold Club. That's where the joke was.
And for Kieran O'Rourke.
Yeah, I won't be here next week. Because after the butt-fucking me and Carl got last week in the trial, I'm quitting the show. And after I find out Kieran died for me in the International, I'm
doesn't have sex with underage girls is a massive wrestling fan. I'm actually starting my own podcast called The Kieran Show.
Yes.
We talk about wags Kieran's been with, divas I want to be with, and just generally how great life is when you call Kieran. So that's The Kieran Show, coming soon to Podbean and iTunes.
I am Liam from Rourke and we are out of here. Talk to you next week.